Hello, everyone, and welcome to A Cast of Kings, an unofficial podcast about the HBO original series House of the Dragon. I'm David Chen, and this is a bonus preview episode about House of the Dragon, which is debuting on August 21st. I'm here today with the new co-host of A Cast of Kings. She is an entertainment reporter at Insider and also the author of the unofficial guide to Game of Thrones, Kim Renfro. Again, welcome back to the co-host chair. We announced just yesterday, I think, as people will be listening to this, we announced just yesterday that you are the new co-host. And a lot of Kim Renfro fans out in the wild is what I discovered on the social medias.
Yeah, that was so cool, so unexpected. I think podcasting is really neat in that, like, there's such a more immediate sense of community around it. Like, I'm so used to just, like, writing articles and seeing them, you know, float out into the ether. And it was really, really amazing to see the response to that announcement. And just, I want to take a moment again to thank you for inviting me here and also give a huge shout out to Joanna Robinson, because as I've said to different people, these are big shoes to fill. I'm truly flattered that I am worthy enough to fill them. So thanks to Joanna for carving this path in the first place. And thank you to you for bringing me along.
Of course, of course. And my favorite comment in response to you joining the podcast is from Mike Gonzalez, who is a longtime listener and supporter, who wrote, quote, "I'm David Chen and I haven't read any of the books in George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire. And I'm Kim Renfro and I wrote the book on the HBO series Game of Thrones," suggesting that as our new intro. "Incredible free agent signing. How on earth did she last on the market this long?" Good question, Mike Gonzalez. Good question. Well, I obviously made you an offer you could not refuse. So we're really grateful that you are joining us on this journey, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So what we're going to do on this episode of A Cast of Kings is we are going to talk about a series of new stories that have debuted online. Over at Entertainment Weekly, there was a story by Nick Romano entitled "Burning Down the House, How Game of Thrones Enters a New Age with House of the Dragon." And at Hollywood Reporter, there was a two-part series called "Inside House of the Dragon, The Battle to Replace Game of Thrones." There was also a new official trailer for House of the Dragon released yesterday. So we are going to talk about all of the revelations that were in these stories and what it foretells for what we can expect from House of the Dragon. Now, before we get going, I want to say a quick word about spoilers. It is my opinion that one of the reasons A Cast of Kings was enjoyed by many people is that we really tried to be strict about no spoilers for the show. We really tried to be strict about, like, not revealing stuff that comes from the books. Now, there is a book on which the material of House of the Dragon is based, but it is very different in structure and in tone from Song of Ice and Fire, that we discussed in the last episode of this podcast. And so Kim's level of knowledge may not be quite as granular as it would have been for Game of Thrones. However, she still does know a ton of stuff that's going to happen this season on House of the Dragon. And in talking about the stuff we're going to talk about today, we will be revealing things that one could easily regard as spoilers. So there's some stuff that, like, I think is very reasonable to reveal, and we will reveal those things, like, on later episodes of this podcast and talk about them. But there's some stuff that I think is arguably spoilers, and you should know that what we're about to talk about could be considered to be spoilers. So if you do not want spoilers of House of the Dragon, like, the last episode of this podcast really amped you up, you're like, I'm looking forward to it and I don't want to know anything about it, then maybe skip this episode and come back later after you've watched the first season, or tune in for the regular episodes when we will not be revealing any spoilers at all for future episodes. But I do just want to warn people, if you're very spoiler averse, that we are going to be talking about spoilers, but we are also talking about information that is out there in the public right now. So it's not like this info is like top secret or anything. This is stuff that is in these stories. It's in the trailers. So we will be talking freely about them. So that is what is going to happen. But just, you have been warned if you are spoiler averse. So just wanted to let you know. All that said, let's get into it, Kim. So on the last episode of A Cast of Kings, which was just released, you made some stabs at what the show might be about and the time period that it might cover, right?
Yeah.
So what are some of the things that this Hollywood Reporter story brought to light that might have tweaked or changed some of your revelations?
Yeah, for sure. One of the first like really helpful things I think that was in that THR story by James Hibbard was Miguel Sapochnik, who, as we explained, is one of the co-showrunners and kind of like the director mind behind the show. He explained how he sees like the core of the story is about four characters. So he explained like the main characters are two women and two men. There's a king, which is King Viserys, his brother.
Who's played by Paddy Considine, I think, right?
Paddy Considine, exactly.
Yeah.
His brother, Daemon, who's played by Matt Smith. And then the king's daughter, so Viserys' daughter, Rhaenyra, who is played by two different actors in the show, because there's a young version of Rhaenyra that we're going to see and an older version. The older version is Emma D'Arcy. And then Rhaenyra's best friend is Alicent Hightower. And so the four of them, Miguel,
is that Olivia Cook in the show?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the four of them, I think, are kind of going to be like our central focus, which makes sense, but in the same way that there are a ton of side characters, you know. And so they've explained that like the battle is going to unfold from them. But then in that THR article, we also got an explanation about the structure of the season, which I had said was kind of unclear. Like there were so many different ways that they could have tackled this sort of like multi-generational civil war, right? So Ryan Condal said that the season will open with the teenage version, the younger versions of Rhaenyra and Alicent. And then there will be a midway season time jump, like by 10 years, he said. And he made the analogy to like The Crown. Do you watch The Crown on Netflix?
Yes, I do.
I didn't even finish the first season, to be honest, but I know enough to know that the structure of like a season is that it's not like really like serialized storytelling of like day to day to day. It's like sometimes year to year to years.
Yeah, it's very episodic. The Crown is, but also there's, I don't recall there being a time jump mid-season. Generally, like they have a new season and they have a whole new set of actors and it takes place in a whole different time period, from what I recall. So I think it is notable that it does seem like there'll be a mid-season time jump and there'll be another actor that plays Rhaenyra in the show, right?
Yeah. And Alicent Hightower, two different actors for both of them.
Gotcha.
So then they're not changing the other actors, which I think is notable because like King Viserys and Daemon Targaryen are very active in both of those time periods, but they're significantly older men. And I think that that's probably intentional because Rhaenyra and Alicent both wind up having potentially romantic storylines with both of them. Weird vibes, fun little incest vibes, and or just like big age gap difference, classic, you know, medieval woman getting married off at 15 to like a 40-year-old man vibes.
Got it.
Fun
so,
times.
People who are looking for incest in Game of Thrones won't be disappointed this season, probably.
Not even a little bit. No, we're getting all that. The incest part is alluded to in all of the press stuff about this, but it's also just like fully baked into the Targaryen storylines. The lead up to this point in Targaryen history that they're showing in House of the Dragon, part of the reason why this civil war unfolds, like the explanation that's presented in Fire and Blood, is that the kings of the past had so many children and had so many of those children intermarry and have children of their own that the line of succession got extremely complicated, basically.
Gotcha.
So the central tension of this show is going to be about the question of the line of succession, and the fact that most people deem that a woman cannot possibly be heir to the Iron Throne. It has to pass to like a male heir. But the reason why that's even a conflict is because there are so many possible male heirs in different directions because of the incest of House Targaryen that it's like, it's not cut and dry. And then war breaks out.
Gotcha. So thinking back to what we discussed in the last episode of the podcast then, right, I think it's much more clear kind of what the structure of the season is going to be. And obviously, like the focus on these characters, has now been made clear, as you can see on the cover of both of these magazines. Are there any other ways in which reading this Hollywood Reporter story has tweaked your understanding of what is to come?
One other really key point from the Hollywood Reporter story is that HBO is, quote, prepared to greenlight a second season very quickly, depending if the ratings are high enough. So that means that, and then Kondal and Sapochnik have also we got a little bit of like a hint that they have an idea of exactly how long this series would run if it's successful. So that tells me that they did not write season one as like a limited series or like as like purely like a contained storyline. They wrote it with the intention of it running for multiple seasons. And it's just a matter of whether or not enough people tune in that we're going to see that full picture that they have in mind.
Right. I mean, it's possible the decision has already even been made, you know, and they are just waiting for the it's a good sort of PR narrative if the show debuts and then they're like, it's renewed for season two. Like, sometimes we've seen studios greenlight a second season before the first season even debuts. Right.
Yeah.
So they're not that confident in it, but it seems like there is a high amount of confidence. Like, they're probably have the finger on the button. And like, once they get the call about the ratings, they're going to press it is what it sounds like. Yeah,
it's a little bit of like a held breath situation for the next month.
Interesting. We'll see. So those are a bunch of the revelations from the Inside House of the Dragon story at Hollywood Reporter. Anything from the Entertainment Weekly story that you feel is worth mentioning?
Yeah, the Entertainment Weekly story touched upon something that we talked about in our first preview podcast, which was how Fire and Blood is not a novel in the same way that A Song of Ice and Fire books were, and that by having it be this like pseudo historical document that leaves a lot open to interpretation. And Ryan Kondal specifically spoke towards that in this Entertainment Weekly story, where he said that he hopes it will be quote unquote the objective account of the Dance of the Dragons. And so in the way that Fire and Blood is the subjective account of what happened, it looks like Kondal and George R. R. Martin and Miguel Sapochnik will be sort of correcting some narratives around like the version of the story that we've read in Fire and Blood, which I think is cool, and which is what I kind of hoped they were going to take advantage of that fact.
What does that exactly mean, correcting some of the narratives? Like, is there stuff in Fire and Blood that feels like it was misrepresentational in terms of what actually happened, quote unquote, in the fictional universe? Yes.
So really it boils down to mostly the women characters, because the way that George R. R. Martin has created this world is that all of the same issues of the patriarchy and misogyny very much exist within this circle. And so the fact that it's men who were writing down these histories and assuming a lot of like female characters' intentions, it was Cook, who plays Alicent, said also in this EW article, as well as the younger actress who plays her, said that they believe that her character is currently misunderstood based on Fire and Blood, but that that's by design.
Uh-huh.
So,
like, it is a purposefully misrepresentational sort of patriarchal version of that story that then the show House of the Dragon will theoretically speak about accurately.
Yeah.
Or represent accurately.
And this is something, I don't know if you read Watchers on the Wall very often. It's a great resource for like news, behind the scenes stuff, but also they have a lot of writers who do great things like trailer breakdowns. And one of their writers, Petra Halber, pointed out that in the new trailer that we just got yesterday, which I know we'll talk about a little bit more in depth later, Alicent has some, like, there's a confrontation between the older Rhaenys and Rhaenyra, two different characters. Rhaenys is the older Targaryen woman. There's this line in the trailer where she seems to be kind of confronting Alicent and says, like, you've never imagined yourself on the throne. And Alicent doesn't respond, but she kind of has this look on her face. It's like, yeah, maybe I am in this for the power. And Petra pointed out that, like, in Fire and Blood, they more make it seem like Alicent is only in this fight for her children, like for her bloodline, not necessarily for herself. And that's just sort of this trope. It's like the Cersei trope of like, oh, I'm doing all of this for my children, or like a woman in this position isn't necessarily thinking of herself as a leader, but she's thinking of her bloodline. That's sort of the tale that we get told in Fire and Blood, whereas maybe House of the Dragon's going to correct that a little bit and be like, no, maybe she is the smartest person in the room and knows it and wants to be in charge.
I just think it's fascinating that even in fiction, like, we have this thing these days in modern society where, like, we need to look back at Britney Spears and Monica Lewinsky and O.J. Simpson trial and how we, like, treated the women in those situations. And that is a very welcome and necessary reckoning that we're having in pop culture, but that we also need to now do it with fictional universes too. You know, like, for people that didn't even exist.
Yeah. Allison just a funny, Hightower is the Britney Spears of Westeros. Maybe.
Exactly.
We'll see.
Exactly. Okay. So those are some of the interesting revelations from the Entertainment Weekly story and the Hollywood Reporter story. There's also a new trailer, new official trailer for House of the Dragon that dropped yesterday as we're recording this.
The dream. It was clearer than a memory. And I heard the sound of thundering hooves, splintering shields and ringing swords. And I placed my heir upon the Iron Throne. And all the dragons roared as one.
I consider the matter urgent. That of your succession.
Well, who else would have a claim?
The firstborn child.
Rhaenyra. No queen has ever sat the Iron Throne.
The king has an heir. Daemon Targaryen.
I will not be made to choose between my brother and my daughter.
Let's just talk a little bit about our initial reactions to this trailer, okay? Like, what were your overall thoughts? When you watched the trailer, just not even talking about any story elements, like, did you think it was a good trailer? Did it get you excited? Your thoughts on the trailer.
I did think it was a good trailer. I loved the music. It was, I think, our first, like, extended peek at what Ramin Djawadi is doing with the score for this show. And I think that added to, like, the hype.
Exactly. And it's a notably different themes and motifs than from the original show, from what I could tell, right?
Yeah, not a ton of melody similarities, but I pay really close attention to the instruments that he uses. He has this one, it's a duduk. It's like an Armenian oboe that's like a very, like, notable Targaryen sound, but, like, he's like using that but with a different melody. Also, like, really great drums in there. I kept, like, listening, being like, are you playing an electric guitar? Have you ever seen, have you gone to any of the Game of Thrones concerts? The, like,
I've been to one.
It, like, he's like a freaking rock star when he like gets his electric guitar out and there's, like, pyrotechnics. I'm just like, I love him.
I talked about this on A Cast of Kings, but I will say it was a really bizarre experience to go to a Game of Thrones concert, because the concert is designed to be family friendly. But they're playing portions of the show on these gigantic screens, but completely editing out all the actual blood and gore and all the stuff. So it just feels like a absolutely bizarre experience, because you're watching, like, this show that is very well known for being brutal and realistic in its depictions of violence. And then just completely, like, neutered while listening to, like, the music. And it's so weird. It's so weird. Anyway,
it's like,
I love
the
music, and I agree, the music in the trailer is very strong.
Trailer music was great. I also liked that we got more of a look at, like, battle aftermath sort of scenes and, like, more action. Whereas I feel like the previous teasers were a lot more of, like, people talking in rooms with, like, little whispers of dragon stuff. But, like, I feel like you could tell that they have some, like, pretty major episode set pieces in their back pocket here, which is cool.
Yeah, yeah. And we got to see some glimpses of the stuff that you alluded to in our last podcast episode, which is, like, the dragon ecosystem basically alive and well in this world, right? Like it seemed like we saw kind of a Colosseum style dragon arena.
The dragon
I think
pit.
Yeah, we saw dragons like flying around doing their thing, you know, so and got some glimpses of dragon eggs and stuff like that. I'll say overall I thought it was like a very strong trailer. It wasn't amazing, and I think it was probably like 30 to 45 seconds too long, you know, for a trailer. A lot of like repetitive stuff about the Iron Throne and stuff like that I didn't think was necessary. Given that this trailer was relatively light on story, right? It's not like they're setting up one of the characters like, this is the main character and we're going to tell you the story in the trailer. But like a lot of HBO trailers are about vibes, about feelings. And this was one of them. You know, you get some hints of what the story will be, but it's not like this is a trailer that tells a story. And so given that that's the case, I felt it was a little bit too much because it got a little bit repetitive at the end. But from what we saw, I got pretty excited about the show. I mean, it looks amazing. It looks like the world of Game of Thrones has been constructed. We see like a different version of the Iron Throne, which is kind of exciting.
Yeah. Do you know about that? Or do you know why?
No,
they've done that.
Yeah, tell me about it.
So in the original books, the Iron Throne is described as like this hulking, twisted, like really tall chair.
Like multiple stories tall in the book. And in the show, it's like a regular chair with swords in it, basically, right?
Yes. Like it kind of looks like they took an armchair and like covered it in swords a little bit, as opposed to it being this like asymmetrical, whatever.
Right.
Hulking mass. But George R. R. Martin was a little bit like famously like, that's not really like the Iron Throne that I imagined, but whatever. I know that adaptations need to make choices. So it feels like Sapochnik and Condal specifically were like, okay, we're going to like try to bring Martin's true, like sprawling, sharp, intense Iron Throne to bear. And so it seemed like they've completely redone that inside of like the Red Keep throne room to kind of slightly better match George's vision.
That was kind of what my reaction was too when I saw the throne. I was like, oh, that looks more like the one from the books. You know, that's kind of was my reaction. But I'm curious, like, what the in-universe explanation is for why, you know, did Baratheon hire an interior decorator? And he's like, let's get rid of all this extraneous material here.
He literally did in the books. In the books, like, they make an allusion to it. And I almost want to say that someone mentions this in season one also. But yes, like, when King Robert Baratheon finally usurped the throne, he removed a lot of the decor inside the Red Keep that was like specifically Targaryen, like dragon skulls that used to like sit inside that throne room to kind of like be an intimidation tool were put in the basement. And Arya kind of like walks around them in season one when she's like gets sort of lost and overhears Varys. Do you remember that whole bit in season one?
Yeah.
She passes by dragon skulls, and the story, the in-universe story, is that those used to be up and like on display, and King Robert had them hidden. And so it kind of is believable that Robert would have made that throne room look less intense and mean and intimidating by stripping back some of the swords that are surrounding that seat of power.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
So what else from the trailer did you catch that you think is worth pointing out?
You totally mentioned this with the dragon pit, but I just also want to make sure that folks know that like that dragon pit was in Game of Thrones. We just saw it exactly like the Colosseum, where like we saw it in ruins. So that dragon pit is where at the end of season 7, Cersei and Jon Snow and Daenerys have like a big meeting, and they show her the white in like the cage. So that's supposed to be taking place in the ruins of the dragon pit. And now in House of the Dragon, we're going to see what that structure looked like with like a full domed ceiling, little, imagine it like a horse stable, but for massive dragons. So that'll be pretty cool. Again, just like all of the illusions of like seeing pieces of King's Landing at the height of magic and dragon power. So that's really cool. Also the cat spa dagger. Did you spot that?
No, I didn't catch it. But this is the dagger that ended up killing the Night King, right? Yeah.
Exactly. So we know there was a part in Game of Thrones when Sam Tarly was like going through old books and he saw a drawing of that dagger in an old text that was specifically about dragonglass and how Targaryens used to like adorn their weapons that were made of Valyrian steel with dragonglass. So I don't think it's going to carry any like specific narrative weight, but they have, in the trailer, we see Alicent like take that dagger out of a sheath and threaten Rhaenyra with it. And it's just kind of cool to like, it's like we're seeing pieces of this history in real time. And then like way in the future when Game of Thrones takes place a couple hundred years later, it's like an archaeologist has like uncovered this thing, or like imagine finding some like really cool piece of like magic weaponry just like thrown in an armory or whatever. It's like, that's what this dagger is.
Yeah. And that's kind of what is an ideal scenario for a prequel, in my opinion, is like a good prequel should give more meaning, make more interesting, improve upon the stuff that comes afterwards chronologically, right? And it seems like there's a potential to do that with this show. So,
yeah.
To imbue the stuff that we knew from Game of Thrones with more meaning in a way that's interesting, right?
Yeah.
Rather than the opposite of that would be, here's just how it came, like the origin of the story without any sort of significance or reason for us to care. Like, here's the guy who like made the dagger, you know, it's like, just because we know who it was or how it was made doesn't necessarily make it interesting. It's like, what is the emotional weight that carries, that I think is what brings prequels, you know, their strength. So,
yeah, I also loved in this trailer that we saw the varying size of dragons. I don't know if you kind of caught this cause it was fast, but like, there's a flash of a character whose name is Aemond, who like we haven't learned a lot about yet, but with a dragon whose like foot is descending on the beach, and it's just so much more massive than even the other dragons that we see, like Matt Smith's character Daemon interacting with in this trailer. And that dragon is specifically, it's a she dragon, a lady dragon named Vhagar. And Vhagar was one of the original dragons that Aegon the Conqueror and his sister Visenya rode Vhagar. So like that dragon is like double the size of any of the other dragons that we're going to see in the show. And I think from Game of Thrones, we're just used to like, Dany gave birth to her three dragons at the same time. They obviously got massive, but the scale of how big a dragon can actually get when they live for like more than 100 years is nuts. And so it's kind of cool that we're going to be able to see that variation, whereas with Game of Thrones we really only had the same three sized dragons the whole time.
That's awesome. Any other thoughts on the trailer? Or I will say, based on just what you've said, keeping the name straight is going to be really difficult in the show. There's Rhaenyra and then what was the other one?
Rhaenys.
There's Rhaenyra, yeah. Rhaenys. There's Aemond, or the Matt Smith's character is
Daemon,
and then
versus Aemond.
There's Daemon versus Aemond. There's Vhagar, and then separately there's a Rhaegar Targaryen who I don't think is in the show, right? Or
no.
Maybe he is. Yeah.
No. Okay.
So I think we're gonna need to like sort of spend a little bit of time during the main podcast, like making sure everyone knows who everyone is and who they're played by, and like really like do a good job of identifying them, because otherwise I think it might be confusing. So
totally. Yeah. We're gonna need like a little Cast of Kings wiki search.
A little chart there. But anything else from the trailer you want to mention?
There was just one other character that I thought it was kind of cool to get a peek at, which is someone from Essos. He's an admiral, Kragas Drahar. But his nickname is Crab Feeder. And I don't know if you noticed, there's one shot of like, it's like a post-battle scene, and there's what looks like prisoners who are kind of like tied to a stake sitting on the beach, and there's a bunch of little crabs around them. And it's because Crab Feeder's like go-to move after a battle was to tie prisoners in low tide and then let them drown slowly as the tide came in. And so that's just like one of those like, of course, George R. R. Martin came up with like this gnarly method of execution. And like, it's so A Song of Ice and Fire. And so I appreciate that like they aren't holding back from all of those sort of like extra twisted details about like just how cruel and creative this world can be at the same time.
Nice. I love how that's a little Easter egg for you, Kim Renfro, is like the guys being tied to stakes and drowned slowly with while crabs devour them.
Isn't that fun?
Well, those are some cool details. But yeah, between the Entertainment Weekly and Hollywood Reporter stories and now this trailer, like the focus of the show is now really locking into place. And I think we have a pretty clear idea of where it's going. So if nothing else, I think we can wrap it up there, right, Kim?
Yeah. Till next time.
I do want to say that we are going to be trying to put out a few more bonus episodes between now and the beginning of the show. Kim, can we say that you've been invited next week? Is that possible to disclose? Or
I think so. I think it's fine. It's part and parcel with the job.
Yeah,
I've been invited to the House of the Dragon premiere.
Woo!
Yay!
Woo! So that'll congrats.
Thanks. I'm so excited. That's happening in LA next week, and so obviously no spoilers, but I will be able to dish a little bit about like what that event was like. I've been to Game of Thrones premieres in the past, so it'll be kind of fun to see HBO revisit that that big party atmosphere.
Yeah, so we are going to try to record a reaction episode with Kim sometime next week after she's been to the premiere. We will not talk about the episode, but we will talk about what the vibe was like, what the scene was like, and what it was like seeing all these actors interact and talk about the show. So look forward to that on A Cast of Kings podcast feed next week. Find more episodes of the show at GameOfThronesPodcast.com. Email us at acastofkings@gmail.com. Be sure to get subscribed wherever your podcast can be downloaded because you don't want to miss an episode when the show is live on August 21st. House of the Dragons coming soon. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you later.